Israel loved King David. The nation never tired of telling stories about him. He was a monumental figure, the second of their kings, and by far the greatest. And as my parents told my little brother, also named David, the Hebrew name means beloved. Indeed, he was, as my brother is. For the next 5 weeks, we're going to hear and learn from some of the David stories, including a few that the church has been a bit reluctant to tell. But here's part of one that we've all heard, the center of the story of David and Goliath. Listen. The Philistine came on and drew near to David with his shield bearer in front of him. When the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was only a youth, ruddy and handsome in appearance. The Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. The Philistine said to David, "Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and to the wild animals of the field." But David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This very day the Lord will deliver you into my hand and will strike you down and cut off your head. And I will give the dead bodies of the Philistine army this very day to the birds of the air and to the wild animals of the earth, so that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all this assembly may know that the Lord does not save by sword or spear. For the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hand." Now this story is the one that everybody knows. It inspires action figures and pictures in children's Bibles. When I was a kid, it even inspired the Lutherans to create a claymation children's show called Davy and Goliath, with a little boy and a talking dog. There's something here for the kids. The little guy takes on the giant, and he wins. But there's something here too for the adults. That little nation of Israel, small and disregarded, found a hero in the shepherd boy who triumphs over the enormous Philistine. David is just a kid, sent by his father to deliver some lunch boxes to the brothers. They're serving in the army of Saul, who was king of Israel at the time. The brothers are on the battle lines against the Philistines, and the battle is not going well. It's not that there has been a lot of loss of life. No, in fact, as the story begins and proceeds, neither side has struck against the other. Did you notice that? Battle lines are formed. Team Israel over here, small and ragged. Team Philistine over here, strong and mighty. They face one another, shake their swords, and grunt at one another, when suddenly Goliath steps up. Israel has never seen anybody like him. He's got to be 10 feet tall. He's covered with armor plating. His spear is enormous. The tip of it must have weighed 15 or 20 pounds. And he's ugly. The Bible doesn't say that, but we know that to be true. So he's big, and he's ugly, and he has a big mouth. When David drops his food, he hears Goliath mouthing off. "I can take you all," he bellows. "There's no way you Israelites will win this war. Look at how big I am. Look at how impressive I am." Then he proceeds to insult them, demean them, denounce them, dismiss them, and he makes all this noise before any actual fighting takes place. This goes on for 40 days. It is a battle of words. Every day, Goliath steps out, struts his stuff, and insults the Israelites. What do you expect? He's a Philistine. When John Cleese and the guys at Monty Python wanted to insult somebody, they would say, "This is just the sort of blinkered Philistine pig ignorance that I've come to expect from you non-creative garbage." That and your mother was a hamster and your father smelt of elderberries. Words, words, words. No action, just a lot of words. That is all the Philistine has going for him, an endless heap of insults. And of course, he's 10 feet tall. David hears this, the 40 days of insults, the put-downs, sees the swaggering. In response, he only has one word in his repertoire: God. Goliath speaks garbage. David speaks of God, which means there's a world of difference between them. When the giant sees little David, he makes fun of him. Am I a dog that you come after me with sticks? Now, David could have insulted him right back and said, you're no dog, you're worse than a dog. But he doesn't say that. He says, God who delivered me from the teeth of the lion and the claws of the bear will deliver me from this Philistine. Goliath of Gath says, come to me and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and the wild animals of the field. Or as Eugene Peterson translated it, kid, you're going to be roadkill. Yet David says in response, you come at me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, whom you have defied. To see the shape of the battle, the oppressor, the giant, inflates himself with a lot of words. The hero of the story, and we know already David will be the hero, speaks first and foremost of God. God has protected him from wild animals before. God will deliver him from a wild-eyed Philistine, because for David it's all about God. This is the primary lesson of the story that Israel remembers, because they're God's people. They were claimed in God's promises to Abram and Sarah. They're marked in God's covenant. They're released from Egyptian slavery by God's power. They're led out of chaos by God's Torah instruction. God is bound to them, and David knows this in advance. That's why he doesn't need to rely on all that armor that King Saul wants to put on him. He has the blessing of God. So what does he do? David preaches a short sermon on judgment and lunges toward the giant. He whirls the sling around his head and hits the bullseye right in the middle of Goliath's forehead. The giant falls on his face like an 800-pound stone. With that, David pulls out the giant's sword. It's so heavy he can barely lift it up above his head, but gives it a swift swing, and then looks up to see all the Philistines running away. Like I said, this is the story that everybody remembers. If we don't know anything else about the Bible, we probably know about this story. It's David against Goliath. It's Bethlehem against Rome. It's the American colonists against King George. It's Rosa Parks against the buses of Montgomery. It's Martin Luther King Jr. against Bull Connor and his dogs. It's the 1962 New York Mets against the 1961 New York Yankees. We know the story. It's the little guy against the big one. Well-armored, well-funded enemy, and the little guy prevails. What we shouldn't miss is how the little guy wins. He relies on his wits rather than his words. He is small enough that the giant figures he'll be insignificant, but his small size works to his advantage. Goliath is loaded down with 120 pounds of armor. His defense system makes him slow, while David is agile. His spear is so heavy that he needs a separate soldier in front of him just to hold the shield. And not only that, there's some recent medical evidence to suggest that Goliath had trouble with his eyesight. It's in the story. He says to David, have you come out against me with sticks? David is holding only one stick, his sling. And the medical experts are now telling us that given the pituitary malfunction that causes enormous growth, there is often blurred vision. Malcolm Gladwell says this in his book on David and Goliath. He says that's why the giant has the shield bearer to guide him out into the field, which is to say he may be picked, and he's certainly ugly. Those things are always ugly. But Goliath has some built-in flaws. With all his swaggering words, he can't even see his own flaws, which is why he spends most of the ink in this story saying nasty things about David and his tribe. And Goliath, despite his probably poor eyesight, misreads the situation entirely. He's dressed for armed combat, and he's up against the shepherd boy. The shepherd boy has fought off wild animals with his sling, but don't think for a minute it's just a sling. He whirls that contraption around his head, lets the stone fly, and from 100 feet away, that stone would have been hurled at a velocity of 34 meters a second. More than enough to penetrate the skull. The whole conflict would have taken 2 or 3 seconds. I recommend to you Malcolm Gladwell's book. It's well written like all his other books. And he listens to this 3,000-year-old story long enough to learn some lessons from it. We learn, of course, about the importance of courage. As Gladwell says, courage is not something you already have that makes you brave when the tough times start. Courage is what you earn when you've been through the tough times and you discover that they aren't so tough after all. Like the city of London standing up to the Nazis in World War II and still fighting even after the city had been repeatedly bombed. What more can they do to us? Or the civil rights leader like the Reverend Fred Shuttlesworth. Never hear about him? He was a Black Baptist preacher in Birmingham. His house was bombed by the KKK one night, and a police officer pulled him out of the wreckage. The cop said, "Reverend, I know these people. They're vicious. If I were you, I'd get out of town." Shuttlesworth looked at him and said, "I'm not you, and you're not me. Go back and tell your Klan brothers that if the Lord saved me from this, I'm here for the duration. The fight is just the beginning." A few months later, he takes his daughter to enroll in an all-white high school. They don't get in the building. He is met and pulled from the car by white men with brass knuckles, clubs, and chains. They scream at him. They call him names. They smash the windows of the car. He finds his way back to the hospital. They discover he only has minor kidney damage, so he checks himself out of the hospital that night and goes to stand in the pulpit of his church that night to declare he had only forgiveness for his attackers. You know, my friends, it's a brutal world out there. There's a lot of hatred, a lot of angry words, plenty of insults, and a giant or two. But what can they do to us if the God of David is with us? What could ever separate us from the love of God, which is revealed to us in Jesus, the Son of David? And what might we accomplish if we are faithful, agile, persistent, resourceful, and clear-eyed about what God wants this world to become? So, Israel remembers David. The shepherd boy who stands up to the ugly giant. This may be the best known story about him, and we'll hear some more stories in the next few weeks. And the Bible moves on quickly from here. It does not gloat about defeating Goliath. There will be lots of ups and downs yet to come. But when Israel does remember the story one time, it's in that glued together psalm which archaeologists found in a Dead Sea cave. written down years after the moment it was placed on David's tongue, although it would have been impossible for him to write it. And these are the final words that they placed on the tongue of that beloved rascal. "I took away disgrace from my people." Disgrace is taken away, which allows grace to step in. Grace always steps in. The giant may be on the battlefield, but the God of grace is with his people. And grace will win. See you next week.